Welcome to the Dissertation Dive. This is a special podcast series where we dive into dissertations of scholars who completed their doctoral degrees in the past several years. As you may know already, the dissertation is the culminating experience of a doctoral journey, and it includes independent scholarship that is significant to our field. So I thought it would be a great idea to dive into some outstanding dissertations. In today's episode, I'm joined by Dr. Jamie Brunson, the author of the dissertation titled Physical Education Teacher Education Features. Dr. Brunson, thank you for joining me on the Dissertation Dive.
Thanks very much for having me. Really excited to be here.
Well, thanks. I'm excited to have this conversation with you and for folks in the field to learn more about you and your dissertation. So we'll spend a lot of the time today diving into your dissertation. But first, what are you up to now in terms of your career?
So currently, third year assistant professor in physical education, teacher education in the College of Health Sciences at the University of Memphis. And just probably something that I should say before kind of carrying on the conversation. I kind of started my PhD pre-pandemic and then ended my PhD kind of mid/end of the pandemic. So I should stress that maybe the lesson from this is that, you know, everything's kind of contextual in my experience. While I'm going to try and kind of share it as best I possibly can, might not apply to other colleagues and may not have the same affordances or challenges. And I can kind of talk a bit about more about that at a later time.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, I commend you and many others for persevering through that pandemic phase of so much uncertainty. And, you know, it's good for me to see that you've had such a solid dissertation product. I was able to skim through it before our meeting here today. So will you tell me a little bit about your background and how you ended up pursuing a doctoral degree in physical education?
Yeah, so it's funny because, you know, my dissertation is focused on socialization, and it's kind of like we're doing a socialization study right now, which is, you know, quite nice and interesting, especially considering I was the researcher, wasn't the participant. But for the most part, I would say that I'm kind of a traditional entrant into the field. I kind of really enjoyed movement spaces, physical education, sport growing up as a younger person. Grew up in England in a very kind of multinational household. And then kind of was enthused by, you know, wanting to work with children and wanting to remain involved in kind of movement profession. And so kind of pursued an education in, you know, in physical education during my undergraduate and master's degree. And I taught in all kinds of schools during those degrees, but also kind of afterwards. I kind of volunteered for a series of charities during those degrees, and ultimately kind of came to the impression that I did want to pursue a doctorate. Didn't know where or when I was going to do that, except that I just wanted to do that. So I guess that the most profound influential experience really influencing my decision to do it where I did it, and I can go on to that in a minute, was my master's advisor, Dr. Carrie Kinchin at the University of Southampton. He kind of was talking to me about potential opportunities to do this. And, you know, he was just kind of introducing me to people. And he so happened to introduce me to a couple of colleagues at the University of Alabama, Matt Kirtner-Smith, which was my chair of my dissertation committee, and then also Kevin Richards, and then Oleg Sinelnikov. And kind of after speaking with them and kind of meeting with a couple of former and current PhD students, I kind of made the decision to, I was like, okay, well, that's kind of what I want to do and where I want to be. And then the rest is kind of history.
Yeah, well, I wondered, you know, you mentioned Kevin Richards. He and I were doctoral cohort members, so we went through that process together. And I'm sure, you know, those folks that was with you as you went through that are lifelong friends and network connections. I wondered, you were, you know, you're from England. Mm-hmm. Were you looking at many schools, you know, in England and other countries, or did you really zero in on Alabama early on there?
It's probably something that I probably should have looked into a little bit more so than I currently did. I knew at 18 that I wanted to do a PhD. As I said, kind of didn't know where, didn't know when. After my kind of my master's degree, I was honestly, I needed a break from education. I wanted to work, I wanted to earn some money. You know, I was kind of like, I need some time away from the books, and I actually want to do what I said, what I've been trained to do and learning to do. And honestly, it was a result of Gary kind of connecting me with a couple of colleagues at Alabama, which really kind of, I guess, pushed me towards making that decision. I'd already done 4 years of higher education in the United Kingdom, and I knew that there were opportunities available for me elsewhere. I didn't know where, and again, when that would happen. So, Gary kind of really put in a good word. He kind of gave me a lot of confidence, and he said that, you know, if I was to go here, I'd be really well looked after. It'd be a great situation for me in terms of learning and, you know, preparing me to have a career in higher education if that's what I wanted. And then I did. I spent a lot of time kind of doing my homework on Alabama. So several meetings with people like, you know, Curtin Smith, Kevin Richards, and Oleg, and sending tons of emails asking loads of questions about, you know, more, you know, because culturally I didn't understand, you know, how higher education was structured in the US and how it was very different from that of the UK. And then I was intentional in wanting to speak with kind of prior students and current students. And I remember speaking with kind of Colin Pennington, Trehan Lynch, among a couple of others. And the more that I researched it, the more that I felt like it was a good fit for me. And of course, the added bonus was that I was offered a graduate teaching assistantship, which significantly helped. And so that was kind of the main reason why I selected Alabama. It kind of felt right. And it all kind of worked out really.
I'm happy that I did. So you end up at Alabama, and it's in the midst of COVID shortly after you arrive, and you kept up with your studies, obviously. Eventually you had to start thinking about research interest and, you know, propose it a dissertation. What were some of the influential things that led to your research topic?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because you're kind of consumed by the whole PhD process. You know, so much is thrown at you, and you're kind of in such an immersive experience. You're kind of running around like a headless chicken sometimes, and that was certainly me. I mean, the first 6 months was a huge whirlwind for me in kind of being exposed to a new culture, a new routine of education. You know, you're taking classes here, classes there, you're teaching XYZ. Obviously the whole experience had an influence on my understanding of the profession, but it was certainly kind of the coursework and the kind of the influence of the professors that had a real I guess they guided me towards a couple of areas where I had interest. And honestly, I kind of built a connection with a lot of the literature that I was reading and I was working on, and it was kind of through a combination of those things that I came to the conclusion that I wanted to kind of study two areas. And I know my dissertation is focused on one of those areas, but that's really what it was. It was learning as much as possible within the coursework, the impact of the professors, and it really helped that, you know, I was being taught by Curtin Smith, who is an expert in socialization, and he was able to kind of teach it in ways and kind of bring it to life in ways which made me really engaged with it, interested in it. And, you know, I came to understand the importance of studying one socialization and ultimately how that provides a lens with which to understand the whole profession. So it was really a combination of those things. But that's within kind of the socialization. I'm interested in that. But then I also had a series of other scholars and in kind of coursework outside of pedagogy that influenced my second area, which is kind of focused on the affective domain. So definitely the coursework and the professors, and then building a relationship with both the professors and also the coursework, and seeing that there was gaps, and that encouraged me more. So,
excellent. So let's dive into your dissertation a little bit more specifically. Tell us a little bit about your research questions and what did you hope to learn from the dissertation study?
Yeah, so I should probably preface that at University of Alabama, we do a three-study dissertation. I know other programs have different approaches, different fields have different approaches to doing dissertations and all the comps and all that sort of stuff. So, but at UA, you typically study a broad area. And then within that, you have three kind of very focused studies. So my broad area was physical education, teacher education, futures. So broadly, I wanted to understand how is PETH, physical education, teacher education, being implemented currently? Or what is the future of PETH? And how is the socialization of people that would be teacher educators and or currently are teacher educators influencing how they implement and teach PE teacher education or health education? So kind of broadly then, the three studies, I did one study focused on doctoral student socialization and then two studies focused on faculty socialization. So beginning with the faculty, I worked with the early career faculty members and mid-career faculty members. And the idea was to simply describe how are faculty implementing PEET and how is their socialization within higher education, not their prior socialization, influencing how they implement PEET. The other first study was the doctoral student one. So I studied, the question was, how do doctoral students intend to implement PEET as they graduate? And what factors within their socialization leading up to the kind of secondary professional socialization stage is influenced their enthusiasm for and ability to kind of conduct PEET in the way that they did. So, and I guess one thing I should add as well is, in terms of the generating of the research questions, I think all socialization research needs to be connected with two kind of general questions. One is, what is someone's philosophy, or is how is someone doing something, and how is their background, be that their childhood upbringings, their teacher education, or their kind of formal career, influenced whatever it is they're doing. So the research questions, I was really grounded in, okay, well, what is their philosophy and how has their socialization influenced that philosophy? And then while there's been some research on doctoral students, there's actually less research on faculty members. And so that would kind of drew me into well, there's a huge gap here, and it's why a significant portion of the PhD was focused on that.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I know that this is such a rich area of research, occupational socialization theory in our discipline. And so you mentioned that you found this area where there does seem to be a gap and to study it. From a literature review perspective, how did you address that gap? So I know you were citing, you know, the research by Curtis Smith et al. And others who have really good studies on this. Were there other sources that really helped you build up the literature around faculty and socialization?
Yeah, so one thing I'd say is, even though there's kind of, when compared to the initial organizational socialization phase, there is enough faculty socialization research in our area, which kind of contributes towards a broader picture of this, even though the picture might be done differently. So for example, Dodds did a study on female PEET faculty members. Obviously, Curtis Smith's research is kind of focused on specifically more the impact of the socialization on the philosophy. And there's other resources, you know, the socialization book that came out a couple of years ago. So there is a variety of sources that I was able to kind of use to kind of create and, I guess, understand this topic. One thing that I would say is a lot of the research that's been done on faculty, I can talk about this maybe a little bit later. I try to at least capture evidence of proof of what faculty were doing, or at least what future faculty will be doing. So I think it's very easy as qualitative scholars to rely on interviews, for example. How do we know? How do we know that a faculty does X, Y, Z? Can we prove that? And that was an important part, and I think is missing within the socialization research. I also think that we need to potentially move towards a more action-oriented interpretation of socialization research, in that I don't think it's enough now. We've got enough literature which describes the reality and nature of the profession. Now we need to move towards a model whereby, okay, we've described the setting. What can we physically do methodologically, or whether it's a participatory action research project, to kind of move the field on? We recognize that this is a reality, but how can we disrupt this reality? And then the other thing as well is, there's been research on faculty socialization, but there's been less focus on particular phases, I think, within faculty socialization. So the difference between early career, mid-career, late career. There's a lot of research on early and mid in the general literature, but the mid-career colleagues, we know very little about. Those people that have potentially just gained tenure, are moving into leadership roles, and have just begun to kind of really use their voice well, as opposed to strategically complying. So, and that was something I was very aware of. Now, granted, one thing I will say is all higher education spaces across the globe define higher education differently. We all use different terms, different labels. And what's defined as an early career in the US is not that in Australia or in the UK, for example. Right. And so that's where it got a little bit complicated. And I had to make some serious decisions about, okay, well, what does this mean within an American context? So,
yeah, interesting. So I think I'm officially in that mid-career, at least in the American context. So if you ever need a mid-career scholar to talk to, give me a call. But we'll stick with your dissertation for now. You had to carry out some methods to address the questions that you proposed. How do you approach this from a methodological perspective?
Yeah, it's pretty complicated, as you can appreciate. And actually, I had a much grander vision for what I had hoped to do. And I had planned to be get much more kind of observational data to support my findings, but alas, COVID, you know. So I did have to you know, kind of adapt and meet with my committee members and kind of come up with a plan of what can I do, what is reasonable to ask of people, what is possible, what is not possible, and so that was something to navigate. But to give you an overview. With the first study, which is the doctoral student study, 8 purposefully recruited sport pedagogy doctoral students located at 4 institutions across 3 different regions of the US were invited to participate in the project. Whereas for studies 2 and 3, 7 early career faculty members and then 4 mid-career PEEP faculty members based in American institutions were purposely invited to participate. For the doctoral students, the techniques I used were 2 formal semi-structured interviews, the supplementation of documents and artifacts. So documents I consider as more kind of policy-based documents, whereas artifacts are more pedagogy-based documents. So the interviews were done to get a descriptive understanding of their philosophies and their socialization. The documents and artifacts were used to kind of supplement and really kind of gain evidence of, well, if a doctoral student said that this was their philosophy, where's the evidence to support that they're doing this right now? So the documents and artifacts were supplementary of that. And then they created an ideal PEEP program by using a scope and sequence document. So they created in their own imagination and creativity and in their own ways their ideal PEEP program. And so obviously then I sought for alignment between that. Whereas with the faculty members, I used the same first 3 techniques. So 2 formal interviews, then documents and artifacts. But then I also invited, but not required, the faculty members to provide teaching film of them employing or teaching physical education in the way that they did. This was a pretty significant technique that really was significant to the study, partly because during the context, universities have all moved online, right? So it was deemed that it was a reasonable request that we could invite the participants to supply teaching film. Some faculty supplied a significant amount, others supplied less based on what they were able to, and that was kind of greatly appreciated. So and then across that, all data were analyzed through kind of analytic induction and constant comparison, and then I kind of used the same reliability and data analysis trustworthiness techniques to kind of ensure the reliability of the data that was collected based on the situation that was provided.
Wow. So one thing about data collection with dissertations, I've noticed it almost never goes as smoothly as you plan or you hope. And I wonder how you experience things like that. Of course, you had COVID to wrestle with, but did you face any challenges or, you know, really unexpected things that you had to navigate in that data collection phase?
So it was, I think interestingly, despite COVID, I should say that the data collection process was relatively straightforward for me. I'm very, very thankful for. I guess the question that was really influencing kind of me and my committee and what we were talking about is how do you do a meaningful project when the world shut down and when people aren't living a normal life as they would, I guess, kind of normally live. So for the most part, I guess the challenges that that I faced were pretty normal. Being a novice researcher, learning how to do all these techniques, juggling them all at once, contacting all the participants, managing the data, storing the data effectively, and then trying to make some sense of the data without, you know, kind of messing everything up and having to start again. So I think for the grand scheme of things, I was very fortunate. The data collection was smooth. And another thing I should say is, whilst I was on a graduate teaching assistantship for the first 2 years, my time at the University of Alabama, I was also given a graduate fellowship award for my final year at the university, because of the kind of what I'd done for the program and the kind of the teaching that I was doing, the research that I was engaged in. So that was a huge help for me in that my primary focus was finishing my dissertation and doing it. And so I had a lot of time in the day to kind of do, I guess, manage all the data collection and then obviously work on writing the project. So I was very, very fortunate in that, because I know that that's not the case with a lot of other students. They may still have an assistantship and they're doing all their work in their evenings or on the weekends. And don't get me wrong, I worked pretty much every weekend, but still, you know, so in the grand scheme of things, I think it was a relatively smooth process. I'm very thankful for it.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. That fellowship makes a big difference. You know, sometimes it's possible, sometimes not, but anytime a student can do that, I'd highly recommend it. So, you know, you've gone through this process, you've got the data, you have a qualitative approach to analysis. What were some of the most important findings or take-home message that you can share from your study or several studies, I guess, you have here?
Yeah. Well, there are kind of several things. I guess I can kind of generalize here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, different faculty espouse different philosophies for various reasons, as informed by, you know, different socialization journeys. With regards to doctoral students, they kind of espouse a very similar philosophy to based on kind of the socialization experiences that they experienced themselves. So that was pretty significant. They also, and I'm kind of being very general here, they kind of espoused a combination of a behavioristic, traditional craft, and critical inquiry orientation. all of which espouse different things. So behavioristic orientation is more focused on kind of teaching effectiveness and mastering that component, you know, being very knowledgeable about pedagogies. Traditional craft is very kind of field-based, and then critical inquiry orientation is kind of orientation grounded in kind of critical theories and kind of understanding that people live and are experiencing social turbulence, and we need to teach teachers how to prepare, you know, work to work with youth that come from very different backgrounds. So generally speaking, they espouse those philosophies. But what was interesting with the doctoral students is that they had a growing dissatisfaction with the, I guess, the business-like model that schools and universities were engaging with because of various reasons. That's a kind of very brief overview of the doctoral students. The same thing with the faculty, the early career and mid-career faculty members, they kind of espouse a combination of very kind of teaching effectiveness, field-based, and then critical inquiry-oriented philosophies of the profession. Some programs were more focused on or dedicated more time to kind of teaching effectiveness. Others were grounded in more field-based work. And then there was an emerging group that were concerned with critical inquiry orientations. With regards to the faculty and the socialization, because the doctoral students, we know a little bit more, but focusing on the faculty, we noticed that obviously all faculty members, just like K-12 teachers, employ coping strategies as they are engaged with the institutions. So, you know, a lot of faculty, especially early career faculty members, you know, they are complying with the culture that is already established. They're not looking to rock the boat too much if they believe that the program is fine or is somewhat similar to the philosophy that they espouse. But another thing we found was that as faculty were getting tenure and as they were being moved into more administrative positions, be that program coordinator, be that department chair, for example, or getting tenure in general, they were more vocalized in how they're attempting to kind of navigate the space of higher education as well as develop the programs that they worked in, which was as we expected. But obviously the challenge is, we want faculty to be able to contribute immediately. So how do we ensure that faculty feel comfortable contributing to the development of programs and research lines and improving the culture of peaks and heats at the universities that they're based in? And so for some faculty, they shifted from kind of a strategic compliance to a more of a kind of complete strategic redefinition model, where they didn't have to comply too much because they were already working in programs with professors that shared similar philosophies. So they were aligned. But that's not the case. Another situation, there was some faculty that worked in really kind of inhospitable situations where they didn't feel comfortable that they could change the program, or they tried to update and improve their programs, but they were hindered by other factors, such as, you know, administrators not potentially agreeing with the proposed changes that faculty members want. You know, sometimes faculty working in situations where they may be teaching too much, or they may not have the time to do the kind of research they hope to do, for example. So it's very contextual, obviously, but in the grand scheme of things, we found that most peak faculty were indeed supported, valued, appreciated, and that their philosophies of peak were able to kind of blossom and flourish within their institutions. So, and there is, of course, more things here as well, but, you know, this is just around a summary.
Yeah, and that's the thing about a dissertation. It's there's a wealth of information in these documents that, you know, is one of the reasons I wanted to do this project and draw attention to this this work. So you have findings that certainly have significance to the field. And as I listen to you talk about it, it's so interesting because you're an early career faculty member at an American university. And that was really a part of your study, was to understand what it's like to be in that role. And so 3 years later, you know, you're in that role. And so that's a really unique thing about you and your research line. Has that shaped your experience? How has that shaped your experience at Memphis?
Yeah, so it's pretty incredible, actually, because this research, even though I guess I didn't really think about it at the time, was really helping me to understand the landscape of higher ed in the US. And I was learning so much from the people that I was interviewing and working with. They were telling me all their stories, all the things to be prepared for, things to navigate, how to navigate certain things. And so it was an incredible experience for me, a learning journey. And coming from a different country and learning a new system, and getting kind of insider perspectives into higher ed. And so, yeah, I kind of gained a tremendous amount of kind of knowledge and understanding about the job. And also it really enthused me again, and it kind of reassured me that I was making the right decision to pursue a career in higher education. The things I kind of shared a lot of similarities with the people that were participated in my project. So it was kind of, we had the same story here, we had the same story there. This was my experience, this was your experience. So that really helped. And granted, as well, it added to my, I guess something which I lost is the conference situation during COVID. In that, yes, I didn't have a chance to network at conferences. But what I did gain through my project was that I gained a series of kind of more, I guess, in-depth relationships through the research. And I know that, if needs be, I can contact these people and ask them questions and support. And I mean, I learned so much, especially from like them sharing documents and artifacts and and the teaching film and looking how they were teaching certain things. And why were they teaching methods in this way? Why were they teaching it in that way? What's the pros and cons of having a highly field-based program versus a highly kind of pedagogical effectiveness-based program? So it was excellent for me in that sense. One thing I would say about the last point we talked about, obviously on the dissertation document itself, that can be as long as you want it to be, right? In the grand scheme of things, even though I think we're moving away from this 250-page book kind of model of doing a dissertation. But in the articles too, you only have so many words and so many pages with which to represent the story of those you're working in. So there were a surprising amount of things which, I had to kind of kick myself and like, I wish we could have included this. We can't, for XYZ reasons. So that's a challenge with papers and the research too, is that we can only provide a snippet of the story. But I guess to come back to your final question, higher ed is such a unique space. Universities are so different. Some of them kind of have a vision about going one route, others are kind of very teaching oriented or scholarship oriented. And some programs are larger, some are smaller, and different faculty bring different expertise. And, different colleges have different programs where you connect with different people. And so, for me, it kind of prepared me to be open-minded about, we're all working in different situations, and that there's probably no single right situation based on the field. There are just a series of situations which we exist in and we're working under, and it's our job as a field to do the best that we possibly can given the circumstances that we're in. And it kind of showed me that, yeah, okay, we do have some universities where their department is grounded in College of Ed, others it's in a College of Health Sciences, and others it's in another college. All of four different opportunities and challenges. But that's what I guess what makes was like a beautiful profession, in that we're not all one thing, and there's a reason why some of us are more in health sciences and others are more in education. So I guess it just kind of gave me a good perspective with which to kind of keep with me and carry on. So
So, you've got this dissertation done and you've moved on. How did you disseminate the dissertation so that not a lot of people go to the database and find your document. So I believe you published a few articles out of it.
Very, very kind of thankful. The way in which I guess they approach it at Alabama is you should be writing your dissertation in a way that like it should be published ready by time you're kind of finished with it. That's the expectation, at least within my situation. So I was very thankful that I had a good quality mentorship from my chair, kind of Matt Curtis Smith, but also the other members of my committee, kind of Oleg Sinelnikov, Dr. Woodruff, Heyman Han, and David Walker, and they were kind of very supportive, and they would provide me a lot of feedback with which to kind of create a quality manuscript that is kind of publish ready. And so, yeah, so thankfully I was able to submit them to journals, and then thankfully enough, have them accepted. And I had a tremendous amount of support from various colleagues, especially Matt, in helping me navigate the peer review process. And like, how do you submit a journal article meant to a journal and intended for public? Like, how do you do that? You know, there's a whole kind of language and kind of knowledge which is very much niche and isolated. You know, it's not something that everyone knows and understands, and it is helpful if people, you know, are able to hold your hand and walk you through the process. And I had all of that. So yeah, very thankful I was able to send stuff to journals and get published and be in a position where I can kind of carry on that work right now. And obviously I try hard to kind of share my work through Twitter, ResearchGate, because, you know, if we're not trying to share this work, who are we doing this for, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's right. So then what's next with this line of work? Do you plan to continue, you know, follow-up studies, or how are you, you know, moving on from the dissertation?
Yeah. So broadly speaking, I'm really interested in two areas of research, the effective domain, specifically character education, but then also socialization. And so kind of since moving from Alabama, I've been really intentional in continuing this research and in studying faculty socialization specifically, but also I'm not excluding research on other phases of socialization as well. So a big lesson that I learned from Alabama was that in the qualitative space, we have a ton of one-hit wonders, and that there's a lot of qualitative research, maybe not in the socialization literature, but in other paradigms. There's very few studies that I guess that people just do again and again and again, just with different contexts, different populations, kind of similar to maybe like a quantitative perspective on doing research. But in the qualitative research, we have so many incredible one-hit wonder studies. But could we replicate those studies and do them again and enhance, improve them, do them better than we did previously, and then also, I guess, build on what we previously know? So as it stands right now, I've my primary goal has been to just replicate what I've been doing, in varying it and doing with different groups, participants based in different locations, espousing different forms of socialization. So with regards to the socialization research, that's what I've been doing. So trying to carry on and kind of mirror this research, but, you know, enhance it.
Yeah. It's a really thoughtful point about qualitative research and kind of replicating studies. I mean, they're often sort of a case study approach, and they illuminate some important influential findings. But of course, we know if we do it in a different context, you're going to have different interpretations, and it's just going to further enrich that that data. And I'm sure if other scholars follow, you know, your methodology, they may reach different sorts of conclusions that can be additive to what you provided. So, yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. I hadn't given that any thought before hearing that. So I'm glad that you're pursuing that. And it sounds like the makings of kind of a nice research note or commentary type of publication to bring this to folks' attention. So
I'd like to, yeah. In a couple of years, once I've done a little bit more of this, you know, kind of maybe writing some sort of paper where I think maybe it's like a future directions paper or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. So, you know, moving toward the end of the interview here, this has been a great conversation for me to learn about your work. We're talking about your dissertation, and for folks that are out there thinking about a dissertation or maybe struggling with a dissertation, what advice or encouragement might you be able to offer them?
I guess two things that I would say is, the first thing is, I guess, sticking to your guns. In that, if you've done your due diligence and you've done your research and you've done the reading and you've put yourself in a position where you're obviously a doctoral candidate and you understand the fields that you're in, if you truly believe, based on your knowledge and understanding, that there's a gap, or that there's something that needs to be done, or we need to look at something differently, pursue that and kind of stick to your guns. You might have people say, you know, I think you should be doing it this way, I think you should be doing it that way. But I think there's kind of strength in, if you truly believe and back yourself in, this is a right line to go, this is a gap we need to address, and back yourself, you know. And and a dissertation isn't, you know, your whole life's research, you know, it's a part of it, you know, it's a start of your journey in many ways, unless you've done tons of research prior to your PhD, and it might not be the start of your journey, but it, you know, it's a part of it. And then another kind of piece, I guess, would be, your first draft isn't your final draft, regardless of how good you think it is. Even after I kind of defended, you know, I still had to improve my dissertation, you know, I still had to add it. And granted, again, you go through the peer review process with journals and they ask you for even more stuff, you know? And so I don't think, you know, your first draft or a couple of drafts, you know, it's not an end product, you know, and you'll never have an end product. Work can always be improved. It can always be looked at differently. And there's nothing wrong with that at all, you know, but it's okay. Being aware that drafts will improve, but also be aware that there will come a point where, okay, you've done what you set out to do, and that's perfectly fine, you know. Answer one question and then move on and ask another question and then go and answer it, you know, and that's really kind of, I think, a nice way to approach it. So I guess that would be it.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's fantastic advice. Thank you for sharing that. And really, thank you for letting us dive into your dissertation and learn a little bit more about you. I think my questions have run up. Is there anything else you'd want to share about your dissertation experience that we haven't covered yet today?
I don't think anything else. I think we've about covered it. And if people are interested, I encourage them to read the papers, and I'm more than happy to send them to them. But very thankful to be invited and that we got to have this conversation. So,
yeah. So, Dr. Jamie Brunsa, University of Memphis, I'm glad we're through the COVID isolation, and perhaps we'll see you at a conference someday.
Absolutely. Do it.
Thanks for joining me on a Dissertation Dive.